This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
Hi, this is Chris Evans with the Storage Unpacked podcast, and I'm here this week with Chad Kenny. Hi, Chad.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you with all this lockdown?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Things are great.
Good. Excellent. Now, the last time we spoke to each other, you were working for a different company. You're now working for Clumio, debt protection company. Why don't you tell us what you do, and then we can dig down into this week's announcement and some background about the company and the products.
Awesome. So I'm over here at Clumio. I'm the VP and Chief Technologist, and I get the honor of working on product strategy to technical partnerships and alliances, solutions engineering, and even our field CTO organization. And so I have a blast kind of digging into the technology, figuring out how it kind of partners with various other solutions and looking at kind of the long-term platform play for Clumio to be able to leverage the data that people protect today and then onto the future do some other fun things with it. So excited to be here with you.
Excellent. So let's very quickly just talk about what you've got coming out this week, and then we can go back and do some background about the company. Now, you are a SaaS data protection product platform. And what you've announced this week is support for Office 365.
Yeah, so very exciting times for us. I'd say, you know, when I joined the company, we had this vision and strategy of being able to protect data across, you know, public, private, and SaaS-based solutions. And this Microsoft 365 new innovation that we're bringing to customers is completing that vision, now being able to protect in one platform all of these different clouds. And it's exciting for us because it really enables us to be able to protect data along the customer's cloud journey. And we'll dig in more on that. But effectively what Clumio is it's a secure backup as a service offering for the enterprise that really just gets rid of the complexity of on-prem infrastructure and enables you to protect data no matter where you are along that cloud journey. It's been an exciting time for us to really be able to leverage the public cloud, and we had the late movers advantage here to be able to leverage things like, you know, serverless and containers and things that are much more mature these days than, let's say, they were 4 or 5 years ago when many of the products were born.
The SaaS side of things is quite an interesting one. You say about, you know, not being first mover. There are a number of companies that have sort of obviously started in this industry and this area of the industry dealing with data protection. But obviously, the reason I think a SaaS offering works quite well is because we're now starting to see people using a mix of different technologies. So there's on-prem, there's cloud, people are using multiple clouds. You know, you could be using SaaS offerings like Office 365. So you really have a real range of requirements in terms of data protection. And if you, for example, if you think about it, it makes no sense to protect cloud-based solutions like Office 365 and AWS, for example, back on premises. So it's sort of like a natural evolution for us to see data protection heading towards a cloud and a SaaS model.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense because if you think about it, data is becoming more and more dispersed across many clouds, as you mentioned, but there's also a ton of data gravity associated to it. The world of the data center was easy to move data from one rack to another rack or one data center to another data center. But nowadays, moving data out of a cloud or even backing up data from one cloud to another cloud becomes a pretty costly maneuver with egress charges and the like. And so, you know, we built a platform that has a disaggregated control plane and a disaggregated data plane. So you have the ability to land data planes in any one of these subsequent clouds. So you get one common view with a single index to protect all of your data across each one of these clouds, but do so in a highly efficient manner where the data stays in the cloud that it was created. Now, there's a couple exceptions to these. Obviously, on-prem, we back up the data to the public cloud. So we get the utility of scalability and elasticity and really the infinite scale of the cloud that's available today. But, you know, when you look at cloud to cloud, like let's say going from AWS to Azure to GCP, by having that disaggregated data plane, we actually can land a data plane in that cloud, avoiding the need to move the data out and protecting the data still in one consolidated way with unified policies.
Now, that's a very interesting sort of architecture when you think about it. So it would be possible for somebody to run their own backup software in a public cloud directly. You know, you could just fire an instance up. But as you said, when you start looking at the challenges of moving data between platforms, you've got that real issue that you might be one day backing up an instance or an application or some data source in, say, Amazon, and you might want to move it to GCP, say, in order to do some sort of analytics against it, because the services there are better to do that. Or you just generally might want to move your workloads around for cost or for other reasons. Mm-hmm. So not having that ability to restore them where you want to restore them and having to pay egress charges between clouds can be a bit of an issue.
Yeah, sizable. And the other one just to mention is, you know, yes, you can run data protection platforms in the cloud. But I mean, if you think about what's happening here is that data protection solutions were built on a compute platform that ran 24/7 and was kind of built around the data structures and the quantity of compute that was finite to that device. And now moving to the cloud, not only are you limited on the scale there, of course, you can have many nodes, but you're running those nodes 24/7. So you're not getting the efficiency of what you would get if you built cloud native on things like, you know, serverless Lambda functions that only kick off when an event is kicked off. And so we get great utility out of being able to build this. But the big thing I'd say that we found is by having the solution outside the customer's environment and building a true air gap solution, we really have been able to help customers alleviate things like ransomware, bad actors in the environment, and even enable them to have longer term retention at sizably lower costs than what they could build themselves in their own cloud.
Okay, so let's talk about what you do actually support, what the platform does, and which platforms you support today. What is the breadth of what you're offering?
Yeah, great question. So we kind of followed exactly what the customer did. So everyone kind of went to a private cloud with VMware predominantly. And so we support VMware on-premises, as well as VMware Cloud running in AWS. And so we have a small OVA. It's about 4 vCPUs, 8 gigs of RAM, 26 gigs of, you know, storage capacity that streams data out, doing dedupe, compression, and encryption before the data is sent to us. And then within VMC, we do the exact same thing. But the nice part here is that we actually enable a S3 target or S3 endpoint in our account, alleviating any egress charges that may come out, you know, going across across accounts. The other thing that we recently added in was native EBS support in AWS. So for people who are kind of going through the next stage of their evolution in cloud, which was the lift and shift model, EBS was a great thing that they needed to protect in a completely different way than what they did before. So you couldn't put an agent in it and then back it up back on-prem. And so we're doing things like enabling people to protect enterprise applications and get long-term compliance without having the high costs associated with doing things like snapshot orchestration and the like. And so then the last thing that, you know, we're announcing here today is the Microsoft 365 protection that we add in as well. So now we have the private, public, and now SaaS data protection all in one common platform. And what's great is you can use one policy to protect them all, or multiple policies, of course, but one single common interface to be able to manage all these is pretty awesome. And it doesn't stop here. We're going to continue the evolution into the public cloud and, you know, innovate in areas that our customers are going towards along their journey.
I was interested to see that you talked about separating the control plane and data plane in a backup or a data protection sense. And I think that's quite an important factor to go back and talk about. And the reason I think it's important is because you just raised policy and you raised the way in which people actually look at data protection. If you imagine, look at many large enterprises, many of them, almost pretty much everyone that I ever worked in had probably half a dozen different backup software tools from different vendors. You know, we had all the ones you'd expect. And we pretty much had a lot of them sitting there just idle because we were using them as what we used to call museum environments that were just left in case we had to restore anything from them. You know, we didn't really do anything with it. And you ended up with multiple versions, multiple products sitting across your environment. And it was a real mess. Now, one of the challenges there was you had no real idea whether any of those environments were consistent in terms of the way they were applying the data protection. And they may have had different techniques to apply that protection. So keeping them consistent from a policy perspective and a compliance perspective for the as far as the business was concerned would be quite challenging. Whereas by doing what you're doing, you're effectively saying, let's set the policy once and then let's decide how that's applied as we actually protect that data in the different locations.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, you look back at the time of on-prem, there was a lot of complexity there with different tools and applications and the like. And now you get into the cloud where you have multiple public clouds, many SaaS solutions, and even inside of one public cloud, you may have hundreds, if not thousands of accounts. And so providing that consistency of protection across each one of these data assets is immensely powerful Because you look at, you know, the security challenges of today and the compliance challenges of businesses, and being able to see that I'm delivering on that compliance in one view across all of those data sets are great. But think about the future of this. This gets even more powerful when now I have a single consolidated repository, a single index and catalog of all my data. Imagine the possibilities of what you can do with that across the security or the transformation front or various other things that allow you to get leverage from the data well beyond just data protection itself. And it's exciting for us to be able to help customers be able to, you know, truly get leverage from the data. I always jokingly said that the, you know, backup administrators back in the day had the the jewels of the entire enterprise, but they never had a data platform to do much with. You know, they had every version of how that data has changed over time in one common platform, but they just never had the ability to do much with it. And so that's really what we're trying to bring to enterprises today, is the ability to leverage that data.
I think backup administrators have always had the keys to the kingdom, because mm-hmm. they've got always had the ability through a proxy effectively to backup and restore or effectively read and write any data on any platform. So they were always in an incredibly powerful position in terms of the interface they had. And I guess that's one of the reasons why it can be useful having somebody else as an administrator for that air gap for ransomware and so on. But I agree with you that we are in a position where now we're seeing more and more value coming from collecting that data in a single place and being able to do analytics across all of it, because then you can look at a whole different set of useful information that you possibly wouldn't have seen otherwise. So what are you doing at that stage today? Are you doing any of that analytics yet? Or is that something that you think is going to be a roadmap item?
These are definitely roadmap items. And, you know, a lot of my role right now is figuring out kind of what kind of leverage we could get out of the platform. The key initiative of the company and where we're spending all of our engineering dollars these days is driving more and more data protection sources. So that's really the key, you know, momentum of the company. And we're doing it very much in a cloud-centric way. And so you'll see us, you know, we're doing some on-prem stuff with VMware on-prem. We'll probably add some databases in the mix at some point here, but ones that will be applicable to the cloud as well. And we're moving into the new world, less trying to innovate into the old world specifically, because as you look at it, you know, more and more people are moving to the cloud. The things like the situation we're currently in today, is a bit of a wind in the sails of the cloud. People are realizing that, you know, it's tough to go get appliances. It's tough to get people to go install those in data centers. They don't want, you know, random people coming into the company anymore. And so having it to be available instantaneously, delivered through the public cloud with immense scalability, is definitely where the world's headed, and hence where we're innovating today.
That's interesting. That's something we've talked about on our podcast a couple of times, is that challenge that we're going to see at the moment, as we're in a position, which we still are, of lockdown and of what we are classing as social distancing, although it's really physical distancing more than social. Mm-hmm. And as you're right, you know, you can't perhaps get into an organization to install equipment, and perhaps you might not even be able to get hold of equipment. There might be supply chain issues and so on. So using the public cloud in that instance seems like quite a good move. However, if you do that, you might find that after 3 or 4 months, you decide you want to bring that data back because that was a temporary measure using the cloud at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think if you haven't got a joined up data protection process, then you might be in a position where you can't bring those applications back without having to worry about how you'll be able to restore historically from that data if you needed to. So there's lots of good reasons that this joined up centralized data protection mechanism should be used.
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, more and more of our customers are realizing that now is the time to really try to get as much leverage from the cloud they can, and do it in an optimized way. I think the cloud got a little bit of a tough reputation, I guess, during the lift and shift phase, where things were relatively expensive. It was just a more expensive colo for certain people, and some people saw, you know, great leverage out of it. But now's the game to really get to this whole cloud optimized mechanism where, you know, using more PaaS services, using more SaaS services, you know, getting into a mode where you're really trying to get the true leverage from the cloud versus just trying to, you know, blindly move there. And finding these approaches that don't have negative downfalls, like what you just mentioned, are key to enterprises to avoid the pitfalls of what the lift and shift phase kind of panned out to be.
So what do you think about the migration towards containerization, serverless, and so on? And I'll give you a bit of a context to that question, because it's not just a general open question about whether you think they're good or bad as platforms. But clearly, one of the things that we've highlighted in the past is that, or at least I have in some of the stuff I've written, is that if you go back to the days of the mainframe, that was a very tightly coupled environment, data and platform very tightly coupled together. So when you did data protection backups, it was nicely linked. As we've moved on over time and we've gone to virtual machines and we've moved into the container world and now to serverless, the relationship between the application and its package and the data is becoming, well, it's becoming more separated. It's becoming less coupled. It's becoming more loosely coupled, if you like, to the point that containers and serverless almost have no sort of connection directly to the data. That, you know, it's not like a VM where the VM had the name of the application in embedded in it and you knew what it was.
Yeah.
So as we move into that, we need to look at how we're referencing our data within data protection platforms, almost to not be referencing the name of the application that's used to store that data, but actually referencing the data itself. So yep. What's your views about how that transition is going to work? Because I think that's a challenge for a lot of the platforms that are out there today.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit of holding on to the persistent storage media in many different ways. But I'd say that, you know, what we see in the public cloud is kind of exactly what we've somewhat built into our platform, which is we use a lot of S3, a lot of object storage, where most everything persists to. We leverage almost all PaaS services for everything that's a data structure that's either a, you know, relational database or a NoSQL database, of which we either keep catalogs in or our state data or anything associated to the system itself. And then we just run a series of workflows that you know, kick off based upon an event, which are for the most part Lambda functions. You know, some containers. And so when you look at, you know, the model of protecting that data, a lot of it goes back into, I need to protect the PaaS services. Object storage for the most part is so durable and in many cases can be replicated that most people aren't really protecting that data quite yet. It's something that people are talking about, but not in dire need. And then the last part is just the computing functions on how they're actually built and structured in the event that you lose the entire thing. But the ephemeral nature of the computing instances make it so that you can spin these things up almost instantly. And so there's no point in trying to back those guys up. What you need to back up is the persistent kind of you know, data structures that sit behind those computing instances. And this is really where I mean that the whole optimized cloud model is, you know, for traditional apps that haven't been containerized, moving data outside of a database sitting in an EC2 instance and into an RDS instance, or you know, out of a NoSQL database into Dynamo, and getting the leverage of the public cloud and not having to manage the database itself. As you get in the container world, that becomes much, much more intuitive to want to disaggregate those data sets, because you would never want to run a database natively in it, because it just, you know, persisting that data would be silly in those devices.
Yeah, so I think there's still some interesting development to come around that sort of that world, because, you know, we, for example, use that database as an example. You could, for instance, today you could back up a physical server that's got a database running on it. You could back up a VM that's got that database running in it. You could back up a container that's running that, bizarrely, even though you seems like you might not want to do that, but you absolutely can. And there are some databases that suit that quite well. And of course, now we're moving towards cloud native databases where the customer doesn't even have to manage that environment. So what becomes more interesting there is the data itself, and not the encapsulating package. It's so I think the platforms are going to have to head towards being very focused on the data in order to support things like cloud native databases.
That's correct. And I really call that the true cloud optimized side of the world, and really where we're heading to help customers protect those data sets. And you'll see some fun innovations from us through the remainder of this year in that particular space.
Okay. So let's talk about how you would go about actually getting hold of the technology. This is, I assume, all online, all portal based. Are you working through partners? Can people sign up directly? You know, what's the sort of consumption model?
Great questions. So first off, we're 100% channel. You know, we're consumed via a SaaS model. So our partners can sell the solution via a per VM price. So we tried to make the consumption model incredibly easy in the VMware environment, where, you know, you pay per VM, which is a little bit earth shaking to a lot of people. It doesn't matter the size. And you don't have to think of things like storage, consumption, growth, you know, sizing, all of those types of things. You just tell me how many VMs you have and your license for that. You sign up for our service. It's about as easy as signing up to LinkedIn or Facebook. You put a, you know, email and password, and you get access. Getting an OVA deployed, that we call it our cloud connector, is as simple as saying, I want to add a new cluster. You put in the fully qualified domain name or IP address for your internal side. It gives you a link to an OVA to download and a token. It takes about 5 minutes to get that up and running in your cluster. And you're backing up within 15 minutes. Previously at Pure, I used to tell people, we'll get you up in a week. Now in the sales call, we're getting people protecting their data. And so it became very, very seamless with no infrastructure to manage and really no complexity to really deal with. And once you've now started pulling in data, whether it's in EBS or VMware or with the new Microsoft, you know, 365 ad, you can create a policy that can be applied across each of these. So let's say you have a gold policy that you want to retain for 7 years. You can apply that policy across every one of these data sets in a consistent fashion. It's immensely powerful.
And is that data sitting in your account, your Clumio account, or does the backup data get pushed back into the customer's account?
Yeah, great question. So when we back up the data, it actually lands in our cloud or our service. And so it's air-gapped from the customer's environment. So think about it being copied out. So if it's on-prem, it's being copied, it's deduped and compressed and encrypted before the data is sent to us. We also built some really cool innovation in, by the way, for restores, where we do reverse change block tracking. So we only restore the data blocks that are required to resubstantiate the data on-prem. This is 100% a service, so there's no additional charges for things like egress or restores. That is part of the service offering, and it comes out of our cloud anyways, so there's no management of those cloud infrastructure devices. Many of the solutions that are out there today make you deploy in your own cloud, which means you just took on the cogs for their solution, which are highly variable, and in many cases that doesn't incentivize them much to optimize those to be highly efficient, whereas in our side of the house, we're highly efficient in the way that we store the data sets and joint engineer a lot of things with AWS to be able to optimize for that. The other side here is that you don't have to really size anything. It scales to whatever environment. So we have customers who start with, you know, 50 VMs and go into the many thousands of VMs without even letting us know or telling us. And it scales to whatever size environment is required to be able to satisfy the data sets.
I think there's two points there, I'll come back to the second one. I'll just try and park it in my brain so I don't forget it. But I think that's a really interesting point about the way that these sort of SaaS services work. And that's that you potentially might not have any idea of the demand. And therefore, you have to build a solution that's effectively infinitely scalable within the cloud you're working in and can do that incredibly quickly, but at the same time, isn't leaving stuff powered on 24 hours a day on the off chance that a customer might come along and want to do a backup. So it's a very different architecture to taking a solution that might have already been on-prem and just putting it in the cloud. You have to really sort of come up with a different design, don't you?
Yeah, let me give you a couple data points that are really interesting on things that I learned here is, first off, most systems that were built, let's say, on-prem and moved to the cloud become an immense bottleneck and effectively kind of reduce the utility of the public cloud. In our world, what we try to do is leverage the public cloud scale as much as we possibly can. So the first thing is like, you know, when data is deduped and compressed and encrypted on-prem, it's not sent to a compute tier in our platform. It's sent directly to S3. And so this allows us to take Amazon scale for ingest, which is near infinite. Obviously, it has its limitations here and there, but in comparison to running a single EC2 instance or even a cluster of EC2 instances, it's definitely can satisfy a lot more bandwidth ingest for sure. Second is once data actually lands in that S3 bucket, we can kick off a series of workflows, which are just a bunch of Lambda functions that kick off. We call them our swarm of Lambda function or a wound swarm of Lambda functions, our CTO and co-founder. And what's nice about this is that if you have 10,000 backups that kick off, 10,000 workflows are kicked off. It's not like one compute tier has got to try to magically scale itself to what the demand is. Right. It paralyzes the workload and gives us immense concurrency. The last part to this is that, hey, if we want to do a restore, let's say in the cloud, we've got a bunch of options. We could run a process, let's say, that picks up 250 blocks and puts them all together and does them in a serial fashion like many solutions do. And it costs us the exact same amount as doing all 250 at the exact same time. And so if they take a second each, it's 250 seconds versus 1 second. Cost basis is the same for us, but the concurrency we could increase dramatically in the cloud. And so this gives us some very, very different user experiences than what you would see in a traditional on-prem instance or somebody who had moved an on-prem solution into the public cloud.
And I think you're highlighting some of the real benefits of being truly cloud native. You know, you can scale with the functionality of the cloud and you can do clever things like directing straight to S3, which I hadn't realized you did, which is really, you know, an interesting one. Now, I remember, I haven't forgotten the other point I wanted to make, and that's because I actually wrote it down, which is probably a good way of doing it. And that's this whole idea about the air gap. And I just wanted to go back on that one because that one just is interesting simply because I've been talking about data protection, backup, ransomware recently for another reason. And it dawned on me that as you're explaining that situation, one of the challenges you have if you're on-prem and you run your backup environment within your on-premises environment is that the hackers could actually get into your backup environment. Mm-hmm. If you're using the same Active Directory system or once they've got that privileged account, they can get into your backup environment and actually then wreck your backups before you actually then encrypt the primary data. So both primary and backups are ruined at that point. But the way that you're offering your service is there's an effective endpoint at which the mm-hmm. customer talks to you and has no, in inverted commas or air quotes, administrative rights over your environment. Correct. In order to actually, you know, own your environment and do any sort of damage there. So that really does give you a genuine air gap.
Yeah. It's quite interesting too, because not only does the on-prem instance have vulnerabilities for bad actors, internal and external, or ransomware and the like, but when you get into the public cloud, people are effectively keeping snapshots in the exact same account that all of their other production data is existing in. And if they are replicating it, let's say to another account, they're paying double plus a replication fee. And so they're opening themselves up to vulnerabilities left and right. And so this ability to be able to move data outside this, I call it the security sphere of that enterprise, meaning that if the bad guys get in to somebody's account in AWS or on-prem, network, they have zero ability to get into us. We're immutable in nature of just S3 itself. The platform is secure. We have SOC 2 Type 1, HIPAA compliance, ISO 27001, GDPR, CCPA. Very, very secure platform as a whole. But even so, no one can get into it from the outside if they've infiltrated your network. And so it really gives people a lot of protection from a security stance to not have that data be in that security sphere.
Yeah, fantastic. So just let's finish and just remind ourselves about the announcement this week, the Office 365 side of things, and just qualify that for one last time before we finish.
Awesome. So, we're excited about it because I think it really rounds out the platform in SaaS, but also protects our customers from things like accidental deletion, both internal and even external from people getting access to the environment, avoiding some of the exposure of ransomware, where, a single set of credentials could get access to multiple different, accounts and instances out there. Restores are incredibly complex for customers. And so being able to give customers the ability to be able to search for particular emails, browse through email boxes, restore back into the existing account, even use our restore to do things like migrations. And then be able to help customers be able to deliver on compliance, because one of the biggest challenges here is that SaaS solutions don't give you data protection by default. And so enabling the ability to keep longer term compliance, as well as short term, being able to restore accidental deletions that may have not be solved by the good old recycle bin. And this will be consumed for customers on a per user basis. I know we talked a lot from VMware on a per VM basis, and I didn't mention EBS, but EBS is consumed by a per terabyte basis. Microsoft 365 is going to be consumed on a per user basis, and it will allow people to protect many, many mailboxes with the same policy across each.
Wonderful. So if people want to go and find out more, should we just point them at clumio.com? Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, there's a lot of great content in there. We're doing a whole bunch of webinars and podcasts. And so check out the content that we built around the platform itself. And we're excited to get you to learn more about not only the platform, but what we're doing around Microsoft 365.
Chad, thanks for joining me. Really appreciate it. Good to talk to you again. Hope we don't leave it this long until the next time. And yeah, thanks very much.
Had a blast. Thank you so much. Take care.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.